In my early days, I faced a pivotal moment in my career. Instead of following the herd into traditional finance, I charted my own course. Despite skepticism, I founded my investment firm driven by a belief in economic truth and fiscal responsibility. Through perseverance, I established myself as a leading voice in finance, proving that sometimes blazing your own path is the best way to succeed. To get what you want, sometimes you have to challenge the status quo and blaze your own trail. That's what Harry's did. Seeing people tricked by expensive razors, Harry's took a stand. Instead of pricey options, they offer high-quality razors at a fraction of the cost. That's why when it comes to grooming my face, I use Harry's. Harry's understands the value of quality without breaking the bank. Their razors provide a smooth shave every time, and their shaving gel leaves my skin feeling refreshed and moisturized. So don't settle for the status quo. Blaze your own trail with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/gold. That's harrys.com/gold for a $3 trial set. We all make mistakes, decisions that we regret, things we'd like to do over, like not buying Bitcoin when you first heard about it at $1. We all carry around different stresses, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. At times, therapy has helped me and my loved ones in many ways. Therapy isn't just for those who've experienced major traumas. With the right guide, you can discover effective strategies to minimize distractions and truly connect with your needs, setting the stage for a more balanced life. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched up with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Take a moment. Visit BetterHelp.com/gold today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/gold.
The Peter Schiff Show.
Well, the outcome of the presidential race has not changed much since my last podcast, although it does look like Biden's electoral victory may be a little bit larger than the three or two, I believed initially. Looks like Biden may well end up with 306 electoral votes, which coincidentally is exactly how many electoral votes Donald Trump initially won by when he beat Hillary Clinton in 2016, although I think he lost a couple of those unfaithful electors. So I think in the final analysis, he ended up with 304, but he won 306 on election day. And it looks like that's what Biden is going to do, although, you know, nothing is for sure yet. They're still counting ballots in five states. And all Biden has to do to win is capture just one of those five states, and he's the next president. That's all he needs. And he's currently leading in three of those five states. On the other hand, Donald Trump needs a clean sweep. He needs to win every one of those five states to win. And since he's trailing in three out of the five, you know, it's like the odds are probably worse than filling it inside straight for Trump to win. I haven't actually calculated them, but it seems pretty slim that you're going to do that. Although there are some recounts, I think, in some of the states. But at the end of the day, this is the outcome that I expected. In fact, I expected Trump to be a one-termer from the very beginning. I said he was going to be the Republicans' version of Jimmy Carter, and I think that's exactly what he's going to be. Now, I think that Trump got more votes than I expected. So I think the polls, once again, significantly underestimated Trump's support. But if you remember, when he won in 2016, he barely won. I mean, he eked out some close races in some swing states. And this time it broke the other way. Biden ended up eking out some very close races. In fact, in most of these close races, you know, the Libertarian candidates got enough votes, Joe Jorgensen, that her total was actually greater than the gap between the winner and the loser. So who knows where those votes might have gone if she wasn't in the race, or obviously if we had ranked voting where people could have voted for Joe as their first choice and then maybe a Biden or Trump as their second choice, which is something that I would like to see happen. But unfortunately, on a big scale, it's probably not going to happen because neither the Republicans or the Democrats have any incentive to make that happen. So it won't. But the results are not a surprise. And the reason that I, again, have always been confident that Trump was not going to get reelected, and I think the same result would have happened even if we didn't have COVID-19. And a lot of people think that COVID-19 kind of threw a monkey wrench into everything. But I think it would have gone down the same way anyway, because the appeal of Trump the first time he ran was that he was an unknown quantity. And I think a lot of people were willing, you know, to take a chance on Trump. I mean, that's basically what Trump said. What do you got to lose? You know, give me a shot. Things are lousy. You might as well, you know, take a chance on something different. And I think a lot of people were willing to take that chance. But I think after 4 years of Trump, you know, basically being the lifeguard at the swamp and not draining it, he was no longer an unknown quantity. People knew exactly what they were getting when they voted for Trump. And I think that alone was enough to lose some of those blue-collar, Reagan-type Democrats that had decided to take a chance on Trump. Well, they took a chance and it didn't work out. And so now they went back and voted for Biden. And so this is what I have been expecting for a long time. Now, I also had expected the stock market to sell off on a Biden victory. In fact, I thought the stock market would have begun to factor in a Biden victory quite some time ago, and that it would have already sold off. Now, we did get a pretty sharp sell-off in the week before the election. We got the biggest weekly decline prior to an election in history. But since the election, or even a couple of days before, the rally started. We had a pretty big rally. In fact, the S&P, I think, ended up with its highest weekly close ever. It didn't hit a new record high on a daily basis, but on a weekly basis, I think this was the highest close. We had, you know, the Dow, the Russell 2000 were negative on the day, so we didn't finish off the week with a strong gain, but we had a strong week. And I actually then expected, since we didn't get a big sell-off in the stock market on the anticipation of a Biden win, I thought that we might have a buy the rumor, sell the fact, and that the market would sell off once Biden, in fact, won. And that hasn't happened yet either, although I still believe that that's going to be the case. I think maybe it's a little bit like the deer in the headlight, right? That, you know, the deer is staring at the headlight of President Biden and, you know, doesn't really know what that means yet. But, you know, by the time it figures it out, of course, it's too late because it gets hit by the car. And I think a lot of investors are about to get hit by a Mack truck in the U.S. stock market. And, you know, ironically, when I was going over the way Wall Street was handicapping the presidency, the outcome that was considered to be the worst case for stocks is the outcome that we actually got, which is Biden as president and the Republicans retaining the Senate. Now, of course, it's not even a guarantee that they're going to retain it. It looks like they will, but there's still going to be some elections in January that potentially could put the Senate into Democratic control. But it still looks like that's not going to be the case. So we are, in fact, getting the worst of the four possible outcomes, at least the way many on Wall Street were handicapping the race before we got the results. But, you know, it didn't take long for Wall Street to quickly rewrite the script on that. And suddenly this was now the most bullish outcome because we didn't have a blue wave. And so therefore, we're not going to have a lot of bad legislation coming through Congress because the Republicans are going to stop it. And so we're not going to get the big tax hikes. So we're not going to get all the re-regulation that we might otherwise have had under Democratic control of both houses with President Biden. Of course, you could have said the same thing before the election. I mean, you could have argued that was going to be bullish for stocks, except I guess most stock market pundits didn't expect that to happen. They expected a blue wave, and so they wrote a script being bullish on the stock market, factoring in what they thought was going to happen. So again, they had to quickly rework the script because as far as Wall Street is concerned, everything is bullish. It doesn't matter what happens. It's bullish. And so now all of a sudden, this became the most bullish outcome and everybody celebrated by buying stocks. Except I think they're wrong. I think that the Republicans in the Senate are not going to derail Biden tax hikes. Taxes are going up under President Biden. I mean, he ran promising to raise taxes. Why would he not do that? I mean, that's an easy promise to keep. I mean, look at George Herbert Walker Bush, right? He campaigned promising not to raise taxes, right? Read my lips, no new taxes. Yet he raised taxes anyway. So if a Republican who promised not to raise taxes raised them, why wouldn't the Democrat who did promise to raise taxes raise them as well? He will. Now, they're not going to raise taxes directly anyway on the middle class, right? That's not going to happen. They will raise taxes on the rich. And if you think a slim Republican majority is going to stop tax hikes on the rich, then you don't know much about the Republicans in the United States Senate. There are a lot of left-leaning rhinos in the Senate, and they are not going to stop a big stimulus plan that has lots of government spending, right, and maybe even pork for their own districts, standing on the principle of not raising taxes on corporations or wealthy Americans or capital gains taxes. So if you think that not a couple of these liberal Republicans will break ranks and join the Democratic majority in supporting tax hikes on the rich and corporations, so long as they're coupled with some type of stimulus that is believed to benefit, you know, the middle class and the poor. So that is going to happen. Maybe the tax hikes will be a little bit less than they might have been in order to get the Republicans on board. Maybe they have to dial them back a little bit, but they will get enough Republicans on board to raise taxes. And again, they may not even need the Republicans, depending on what happens in January. But more important than the tax hikes, too, is the re-regulation. Again, Wall Street has made a big deal about all the things Donald Trump did to reduce the regulatory burden on American industry. Well, don't you think Joe Biden is going to reverse that as quickly as he can? Whatever Trump did with executive order, Biden can undo, but he's not going to stop there. He's not going to just restore the regulations that Trump eliminated. He's probably got a whole bunch of new regulations of his own that he wants to add to the pile. I mean, he is going to get a lot of pressure from radical left wing of his party to push through as much of their agenda through executive order as he can. Whatever they can't get through Congress, they're going to do on their own. So we're going to have re-regulation. We're going to have higher taxes. All this stuff is bad for the U.S. stock market. The only thing the U.S. stock market has going for it is the Fed, right? And in fact, the rally really proves it. In fact, Donald Trump, one of his stump speeches, or what he would include in his stump speeches, if you vote for Biden, the stock market's going to crash. It's going to crash like you've never seen before. That was what Trump was warning. If you care about your stock portfolio, then you better vote for me. Because if you don't vote for me, the market's going to crash. Well, the market didn't crash. Biden won, and the market went up. Because it doesn't even matter. Right? All of this is spin. They're just trying to pretend Trump is good for the market, Biden's good for the market. None of that matters. It's the Fed that's good for the market. The Fed is providing all the fuel that's powering this market. The irony, again, is what the Fed is doing to help the market is actually hurting the real economy. Now, ironically, they claim that what they're doing is to help the real economy, not to help the stock market, but all they help is the stock market. And in the process, they actually hurt the real economy. And then as the real economy suffers, we get even more of the stimulus that only benefits Wall Street at the expense of Main Street. So it's a self-perpetuating spiral that everybody thinks is going to continue.
As a public person, I am hyper aware of safety and security. Delete Me finds and removes any personal information you don't want online, and it makes sure it stays offline. Delete Me is a subscription service that removes your personal information from the largest people search databases on the web, and in the process, helps prevent potential ID theft, doxing, and phishing scams. Sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts will take it from there. Delete Me sends you regular personalized privacy reports showing what information they found, where they found it, and what they removed. Delete Me isn't just a one-time service. Delete Me is always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information that you don't want on the internet. So take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me. Now at a special discount for my listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/gold and use the promo code GOLD at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/gold and enter code GOLD at checkout. That's joindeleteme.com/gold, code GOLD. Let's talk finance. Wouldn't it be convenient to have all your investment and retirement accounts in one spot? Yahoo Finance does just that. It consolidates your portfolio views and offers expert analysis, making it easier to manage your investments. Let's not beat around the bush. You want to grow your portfolio, fight inflation, pay off debts, and achieve financial freedom. Yahoo Finance provides the news, data, and tools to make that happen. You may think you've covered all the bases, savings, researching, and investing smartly. But to truly excel, you need Yahoo Finance in your corner. A holistic perspective is crucial for success, and Yahoo Finance ensures you have it. With a massive community of over 90 million users monthly, Yahoo Finance is here to guide you on your path to financial success. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But as I said, I think when the deer realizes what he's staring at, this market is going to correct. We are going to see a decline. Now, how deep a decline depends on what the Fed does and what type of program the Fed, you know, brings to the rescue, because I do believe that that's what's going to happen. I mean, that's the only reason that I don't think the market is going to crash 50% or more. Is because I think the Fed will prevent that from happening. It should happen. In fact, if the market went down by 50%, it would still be expensive. That's how overpriced it is right now. It has a long way to go before the market would actually be fairly valued, given the economic reality for the U.S. economy and for corporate earnings. But I don't think Fed is going to allow reality. It's going to prevent that with the fantasy of inflation that it creates by printing money. You know, I mentioned that the stock market or the S&P closed at a weekly all-time high. Look at what happened to the U.S. dollar. The weekly close on the dollar index is the lowest of the year. In fact, it's probably the lowest of a couple of years. We ended up at 92.26. The lowest we've been on the index all year, I think, was 91.75, but we never closed a week below 92. This is the lowest close of the year on a weekly basis. And that is one thing that I did get right. I did say that a Biden victory was bearish for the dollar, and it certainly has been. The dollar was falling in anticipation of a Biden win, and it fell more on the realization of a Biden win. And so the dollar is weak, and I think it's going a lot lower. And of course, there were a lot of people out there who were expecting a strong dollar, you know, particularly earlier in the year when everybody was supposedly going to rush into the safety of the dollar because of COVID. You know, you had that dollar milkshake theory, which I got a lot of questions about. I explained on one of my earlier podcasts that that theory was all wet and I explained why it was all wet. And I think the fact pattern is bearing that out. We have got a long way to go down in the U.S. dollar, because everything that Biden administration is going to do is bearish for the dollar. And to the extent that we don't get as much in the way of tax hikes because of the Republicans in the Senate, the one thing we do know is we're going to get increases in government spending. And so the way Republicans like to pay for spending is through debt and inflation. So it's even possible that the deficits could be larger than they would have been had we had more tax increases on the rich. Although I'm not even sure that those tax increases may not have backfired and actually produced less revenue. But what I know for sure is that the budget deficits during the Biden administration are actually going to be bigger than the budget deficits under Trump. And Trump, in 4 years, by the time he leaves office, he will have added more to the national debt than Obama did in 8. And I think Biden is going to end up beating Trump. I think Biden in his first term, and hopefully that's his only term, although I hope it's not because he dies and we end up with Kamala Harris. But let's assume he doesn't get reelected and after 4 years of misery. But I think that the 4 years of Biden will have even bigger total debt than the 4 years under Trump. And it's not just the budget deficits, but the trade deficits. They're both, the twin deficits are exploding out of control. So all of this is bearish for the dollar, and the Fed is going to be stuck at zero. And who knows, you know, who Biden is going to appoint to replace Powell. I think it's going to be somebody even more dovish than Powell. I think it's going to be the biggest dove that they can find. That's who they're going to be, to head the Fed. So the dollar's got nothing. The dollar is going to get killed. It's not just going to go down a little bit. It's going to go down a lot, especially when all the people who thought the dollar was going to go up suddenly discover that it's going to go down. Why would anybody want to ride it down? Just get out. Cut your losses. Get into something else. You know, and it's not just the dollar that's going down against other currencies. Look what happened to the price of gold this week. Again, that's another prediction that I got right, although I still think I'll get the stock market right as well. I do think the sell-off is coming. But I did say that a Biden win was going to be bullish for gold, and it is. We've had a very nice move up in gold. Gold had been quiet for quite some time and finally broke out. We're actually above 1950. I think we closed the day and the week at about 1952. Now, we're still below 2000, but I think we're going to head back above 2000 probably by next week. And of course, the strength in gold and silver was exceeded dramatically by the strength in the mining stocks. We had pretty big moves. I think the GDX was up better than 10% on the week, and the GDXJ was up better than 12%. Yesterday was the big day. In fact, the initial reaction to the Biden win was that gold and gold stocks went down. And I pointed out on the podcast that I recorded that night that that was the thing that didn't make sense, that if investors really understood what was going on, they would be buying gold, not selling it. They would be loading up on gold stocks, not selling them. And that's exactly what they did yesterday. There were many gold stocks that were up 15%, 20% or more. Most were up 8 to 10%. It was a really, really big day yesterday. That's where almost all the gains of the week occurred on yesterday. But I think we have a lot more days like that to come in these stocks. And, you know, we're still not on the highs. You know, we're still well off the highs of the year on gold and silver stocks. So, you know, the S&P closed at a weekly closing high, but not the gold and silver stock indexes. So plenty of time for people to load up on these stocks. You haven't missed out on anything if you missed out on the rally this week, because what we've experienced this week is just a small taste of what's coming in the weeks, months, and years ahead. So, you know, don't wait any longer. Just, you know, get on board this train. right? You can do that, you know, by opening up an account with Euro Pacific Capital, by buying my gold fund at any discount brokerage house, or working with my brokers to get into my fund, get into a separately managed account where we manage a portfolio of gold stocks, or let me build a portfolio that's far broader than that, that has a lot of value stocks, a lot of dividend paying stocks, a lot of emerging market stocks. This is what is going to benefit from the reckless monetary and fiscal policy that is going to characterize the Biden presidency. One market, though, that was particularly quiet on the week was the bond market. I mean, we did see a slight backup in rates, but nothing big, right? Rates on the 30-year ended up at 1.6%. The 10-year we closed at 0.82%, right? So not even a full percent. But the yields are creeping higher, although they were down a bit on the week. They were not down dramatically. And that is one of the things that's really going to complicate the Biden presidency, is going to be the upward pressure on interest rates and all the money that the Fed is going to have to print to prevent rates from rising. But of course, printing all that money to prevent rates from rising causes the dollar to tank, and it's going to cause the price of consumer goods to go up much more spectacularly over the next 4 years than they had during the past. And I think consumers have already been dealing with a rising cost of living. They're about to deal with a cost of living that's rising much faster. And I believe the employment numbers are only going to get worse. In fact, we did get the non-farm payroll numbers that came out today, almost, you know, like an afterthought. Normally, this is a very big report. There's a lot of fanfare, a lot of anticipation. But, you know, in an election week, nobody really paid too much attention to the jobs report for October. And of course, you know, the election is already over. So I guess it doesn't even matter, you know, whether this is a good or a bad number, because it's not factored into the voting. But the expectation was for a gain of 575,000 jobs. Again, you know, we're bringing back a lot of jobs. These are not new jobs being created, right? Don't let the media confuse you about, oh, we're creating all these jobs. These are workers that were put on the sidelines during COVID that are now being called back into the game. So we're not really creating new jobs. We're just restoring the old jobs that, you know, where we laid people off temporarily because of COVID. So that's all that's going on. So we did beat that estimate. We ended up with 638,000 jobs. But, you know, the estimates ranged as high as 900,000. So we didn't come anywhere near the top end of the range, although I think the bottom end of the range was about 375,000. So it was a huge spread in the number of jobs that people were looking for. We kind of ended up in the middle of what people were looking for. The official unemployment rate went down to 6.9%, and that's from 7.9% the prior month. That's a big drop, a full percentage point. They were only looking for a drop to 7.7. So however they were able to get that, you know, they got the unemployment number to come down quite a bit. Private payrolls up 906,000. Now that blew away estimates of 650,000. In fact, that was even above the upper end of the estimates. We'll see if that number ends up getting revised lower next month. Manufacturing jobs only added 38,000. That was less than expected, right? And they revised last month's down. They initially said we did 66,000 in September, and that number went down to 60,000. So all these private sector jobs that were added were basically in the service sector. Most are mostly leisure and hospitality, waiters and restaurants. I have a hard time believing that those jobs are going to stick. I mean, maybe there was a little wishful thinking there. Maybe some people in the hotel and restaurant industries, maybe they were gearing up for some type of post-COVID comeback. I don't think these jobs are going to be there that long. In fact, I think a lot of these workers who were called back into the game, I think the coaches are going to take a look around and realize, you know what, we don't need you guys, and you know, you're fired now permanently. I mean, initially we laid you off temporarily and we brought you back, but then we realized, you know what, we brought you back. We don't even need you because this is not just a temporary reduction in our business. This is a permanent reduction, and so we're just going to let you go. And so I think there's going to be a big relapse when it comes to unemployment and layoffs early in the Biden administration, which of course is going to put a lot of pressure on Congress and Biden for more and bigger stimulus. And we're going to get it, but it's not going to help the economy. It can't help the economy. It actually hurts the economy. It is toxic to the economy. Every time they talk about stimulus, think sedative, because that's what it is. They are sedating the economy in the name of stimulus. What they are stimulating is the stock market. They're stimulating asset prices, but that's not the economy. But if they're going to gauge the economy by asset prices, well, that's what they're doing. I mean, that's why Donald Trump, who was critical of the stock market bubble as a candidate, embraced it as president. Biden's going to do the same thing. What else can he do? Because, you know, that's the only trick they have, right? And so that's the one that they're going to play.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Average hourly earnings up slightly, just 0.1, so slowing down a bit. The gain last month was flat. They had originally reported up 0.1. They revised that to flat. They were looking for up 0.2 this month. Again, got half of that. But year over year, there is still a pretty big increase, a 4.5% rise year over year in average hourly wages. The reason I think that happened is because I think more of the lower paid workers got laid off. A lot of the people in the service industry got laid off due to COVID, and more of the higher paid workers who could work from home, a lot of these tech guys and people like that, they stayed employed. And so that skewed the average hourly earnings. So it's not like people are getting raises. It's just when you take the average of the people who still have jobs, the higher paid people were more likely to retain their jobs. And I think that's what brought up the average. So in any event, I think the coverage of the jobs data misses the crucial point that a lot of this is noise. A lot of this is temporary. It's not a vibrant economy creating new jobs. It's a sick economy temporarily restoring some of the jobs that it eliminated, and it's going to re-eliminate them once the employers have a better perception of what lies ahead. You know, once they see that the light that they thought they saw at the end of the tunnel is an oncoming train, they're going to quickly reverse some of these decisions. And they're basically going to be gearing up for the next round of stimulus. You know, I think that if it's anything like the first round where you're paid not to fire people, what I would probably want to do if I had a small business is I would want to fire my people now so I didn't have them on the payroll so that maybe I can get bailed out because I wouldn't have to fire anybody. Although, I don't know, maybe the idea is to get these people on the payroll, because the more people that you employ, the more money you can get by way of stimulus. Because I remember the last time it was you were able to get everybody's wages and that was going to be your stimulus. It was a loan unless you fired people, in which case you had to pay it back. But if it all becomes a gift anyway, then maybe that's a better way to game the system. But I do know that that's what's going on. I think people are going to be more interested in how they game the system than how they grow their businesses. Everybody's going to be trying to position themselves to best qualify for the most government money that they can, because they're not going to be making their money in the private sector by operating their businesses. They're going to make their money by qualifying for government benefits. And, you know, that is a recipe for disaster, because we want entrepreneurs trying to figure out how to get rich by improving our lives, by producing more products and providing more services, not trying to get rich by getting more money from the government, because they don't have to improve our lives to do that. They don't provide us with things that raise our living standard. All they do is take from government. And where does the government get the money? They have to take it from everybody else. Either they do it honestly through taxation, or they do it dishonestly through inflation. The government's going to do both. But I think the main source of revenue, at least when it comes to the middle class, it's going to be inflation. And all this monetary stimulus that does nothing but inflate asset bubbles is going to deflate the standard of living of Americans, because the cost of living is going to go up. And even if you're in the stock market, even if the value of your stocks go up, the value of the dollar that those stocks are priced in is going to go down. And to the extent that you're relying on dividends from your stocks, your dividends are not going to buy as much. The value of those dividends is going to go down. You know, even if a weak dollar means U.S. companies earn more dollars, what difference does that make if by the time they distribute those dollars to the shareholders, they buy a lot less? Earning more dollars that have less purchasing power is not a victory. It may appear to be one when you have these false benchmarks, but it's not. And while I'm speaking about illusions and false benchmarks, there's no way I can get out of a podcast this week without addressing the digital elephant in the room, and that is Bitcoin. I know a lot of the Bitcoiners out there have been giving me a lot of flack on social media. They've been, you know, posting on my Twitter account or my Facebook, kind of throwing in my face the big move up in Bitcoin. If you're not following Bitcoin, we almost got to 16,000 this week. So this is the highest we've been, you know, since that 20,000 mark that we hit back in 2017. And, you know, so we got above the highs from the last couple of years. And, you know, the next stop obviously is around 20,000. Now, most people assume that it's a sure thing that we're going to get above it. In fact, they expect Bitcoin to get through 20,000 like a hot knife through butter. Now, as I am recording this podcast right now, we're in the 15,500. So we're only about, you know, $4,500 away from 20,000. Bitcoin on the week is up about $2,000 per Bitcoin, which is about a 15% move. So if Bitcoin can move 15% in 1 week, well, how long is it going to take for Bitcoin to get through 20,000? Well, I think it's a lot further than a lot of people think. There should be a lot of resistance between here and 20,000. Even though we've taken out those earlier highs, we haven't taken out the record high. And so I think that the trip to 20,000 is not the foregone conclusion that everybody seems to think it is. But also, all of you out there who are making fun of me because I don't own any Bitcoin and I missed out on the big gains of Bitcoin, I may not own any Bitcoin, but I own a lot of gold and silver stocks. And as I said earlier, the GDX was up 10% on the week. The GDXJ was up 12%. Those are not shabby gains. Yes, not quite as good as the 15% or so move up in Bitcoin on the week. But you know what? I'm fine with that, because I think on a risk-adjusted basis, I'm doing better. See, I think that there's a lot more risk in Bitcoin than people are willing to admit. I think that the odds of Bitcoin falling by 50% in a day are a lot greater than the odds of my gold stocks going down by 50% in a day. In fact, I think the odds that my gold stocks will drop by 50% in a day are zero. They're not zero when it comes to Bitcoin. Now, I don't know exactly what those odds are, but I think it could happen. And even if it's not 50%, what's the odds that Bitcoin could go down 20% in one day? I think the odds are much greater that Bitcoin goes down 20% in one day than my gold stocks collectively go down 20% in one day. Maybe one stock could, right? It has something bad happens, right? And the stock goes down, but I have a diversified portfolio. I don't think that entire portfolio is going to go down by 20% in one day. So I think that I'm taking a lot less risk by concentrating my speculative money in gold and silver mining companies. And I recognize that it is speculative money, right? It is not my safe haven money, my risk-averse money that I am putting into gold and silver mining stocks. It's my speculative capital. It's the money that I can afford to lose. I don't want to lose it. I don't expect to lose it, but I realize that losing it is possible. Now, I'm not going to lose all of it, right? There's no way all my gold companies are going to go out of business and go to zero. That's just not going to happen. Some of them could, but all of them won't. Most likely, none of them will, because I'm doing a good job or I'm relying on a smarter guy than me, Adrian Day, to pick these stocks for me. So hopefully none of the stocks Adrian's picking are going to zero. But certainly, even if one or two do, you know, the rest of the portfolio will not. On the other hand, Bitcoin could go to zero or very close to it. So much more risk in Bitcoin. But again, Bitcoin is also a risk asset. Don't confuse Bitcoin with a safe haven like gold. It's not. Just because gold was up this week and Bitcoin was up, don't think Bitcoin went up for the same reasons as gold. It didn't. Bitcoin went up for the same reason that NASDAQ stocks went up. It's because people are gambling on it. People are speculating with Bitcoin. So Bitcoin went up with speculative assets, not with safe haven assets. The fact that both speculative and safe haven assets went up this week doesn't mean that Bitcoin is a safe haven. It's not. Nobody is buying it as a safe haven. And if you are, then you're clueless about what Bitcoin is. If you want to buy a safe haven, buy gold, right? That's what gold is. Gold is a legitimate store of value. It's a time-tested inflation hedge. It has served as money for thousands of years, and it currently serves as money now among central banks that hold it as a monetary asset. It is a tier one asset. Banks don't even have to take a haircut on their gold, right? Like they do on other assets. It's treated like bonds, like, you know, sovereign debt. So that's a safe haven. Bitcoin is a speculative asset. But if you're going to speculate, speculate with gold and silver mining stocks. That's what I'm choosing to do. And I think I'm going to make a lot more money on my mining stocks than other people are going to make on their Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies, even if there are periods of time, you know, like this week, where you're better off in Bitcoin than in mining stocks. I think that over a longer time period, that's not going to be true. In fact, I expect the price of Bitcoin to collapse. So I don't think people are going to make any money in Bitcoin unless they sell. See, that's the problem. People aren't selling. That's why the price is going up, because so many hodlers are just holding and hoping, and they're convinced that they're going to get rich. In fact, the arrogance of the Bitcoin community is unlike anything I've seen in any other bubble. I've never seen so many people so completely sure that they were right and that everybody else was wrong. And not only couldn't they lose money, but they're going to make a fortune. I mean, it's not just that Bitcoin's going to go up $100,000, $1 million of Bitcoin. I mean, that's what they think. And if you look, you know, watch on CNBC, pretty much everybody that comes on to talk about Bitcoin is bullish, right? Everybody has got pie in the sky forecasts, you know, again, but despite this, you know, go up to Google trends and search Bitcoin, search buy Bitcoin, how to buy Bitcoin, and take a look to see if more people are interested in Bitcoin today than they were 3 years ago. It's not even close. I mean, the interest in Bitcoin as measured by search activity on Google is no higher than it was 4, 5, 6 years ago. So to me, it's the same group of people that continued to buy or continue to hodl and not sell. And so that supply is not on the market. And then whatever buying is there is able to drive the price higher and higher. But the question is, how much longer are people going to hold out before they try to cash out? I mean, I think any given day you can start to see a wall of selling and then there's no buying, because I don't think we've really expanded the market. I mean, certainly people aren't using Bitcoin as a medium of exchange. It's not being used as a currency. It is being used as a speculative asset, but I don't see that many new players betting on it. I think it's the same faces. It's the same people that have been around for the entire time. Those are the ones that are still there. And they keep talking about all these new people that have arrived at the party, but I don't see them. It's the same small party, right? They just have a higher price on the Bitcoin. But remember, they got Bitcoin up to this price in 2017, and it isn't any higher. And if you go back to what people were saying about Bitcoin back then, by now it should have already been at 100,000 or 500,000 or a million. Remember what all these guys were saying back then, because I do, and they're saying the exact same thing now. So don't think that 20,000 is a sure thing. We can easily crash. And even if we get back above 20,000 again, which is certainly possible, I'm not saying it's impossible, but I doubt that rally would be sustained any more than the rally was sustained the last time we got up to that level.